Hello and welcome to the Music Survival Guide, the independent musician's guide on how to survive in the music industry. My name's Phil, a mixing and mastering engineer. Hope you're all doing really well out there. Life is crazy here, but cool. Always feels like there's so much going on and the year just shoots by. Like somehow I've got a nearly 2-year-old, which is mad, but cool. Life happens, life continues. I was going to say life finds a way. That's a very weird thing to say. I'm not going to say that right now. Let's pretend I unsaid that. Moving over to what I actually wanted to talk about this week, I've got an interview this week with Ewan of Rituals. Rituals are a great band if you like your music on the heavier side. Highly, highly recommend. They've got that great kind of mix of raw heaviness. I don't want to give them a specific genre because there's so many genres nowadays. I'm just going to say raw heaviness and melodic kind of elements that I really like, really kind of catches my ear. So this is a band well worth checking out. We chat about all sorts of things like working with backing tracks.
Decent.
That and be able to know exactly how long your set list is going to be, the benefits of using a recording studio and a producer, and how it can give you real peace of mind when you're recording, if nothing else, and dramatic curtain drops. Obviously, we need to talk about dramatic curtain drops. All that and more on this episode, so I'm just going to say on with the interview. So, today on the podcast, I've been joined by Ewan of Rituals. Ewan, how are you?
I'm not too bad at all, mate. How are you?
Doing well. Doing good. Still alive, so can't complain.
All that matters.
Exactly so. So, my first question, as always, is from an online random question generator. And my very, very serious question for you this week is, what fictional place would you most like to go to?
Now, I'm going to get murdered for not remembering the name of it. But the in Harry Potter, the town, I can't remember the name off the top of my head.
Hogsmeade.
That's the one, yeah. That's where I'd want to go. Either that or Paris and Ratatouille, one of the two. We'll go Paris and Ratatouille. That's the one.
Not real life Paris. Not real life Paris, just Paris and Ratatouille.
Paris in Ratatouille as it.
Okay. Okay, that's a very left of field answer, but yeah. Okay. Well, there we are. Wasn't expecting that. So my first, I guess, real question for you is, how did you get into music in the first place?
So it would have been as a little kid, I was absolutely obsessed with Elvis, like next level obsessed. Had all the videotapes, DVDs, and then my mum got me like a little guitar and I was like messing about with that for a bit. And then, yeah, my dad kind of started introducing me to other bands. My first gig was Depeche Mode when I was 6 years old. And then
you were six?
When I was six, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Not bad for a first gig. And then from there, it was kind of, I think I started properly playing guitar when I was about 10, 11, taking a few lessons and stuff. And then just kind of, once you kind of listen to the music your parents show you and stuff, you kind of go on your own little journey after that. And that's still always ongoing.
Still discovering music, still finding your way.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Same. So
yeah.
It never ends.
No, there's too many great bands.
Yeah, there are. It's ridiculous, to be honest. So going from that point, from kind of picking up the guitar and things like that, how did you get to Rituals? How did you get to the band?
So when I was 16, I left school and went to college. And kind of at college in Newcastle, it's the Academy of Music and Sound, me and Lewis met. And very straight away, we'd never met each other before, but there was just that kind of chemistry between the two of us as friends. And we kind of always knew we were going to be in a band together at one point, I think. But it didn't happen for a couple of years. And then we were both kind of just didn't have anything really going musically. I'd been in a band that had kind of fallen apart before it even played a show. That's the classic story. And we just dropped each other a message. I sent him a few demos and then we kind of just cracked on from there, really. That would have been 2018. And then it kind of, we had a massive shift and it would have been 2020 when we started taking it properly serious and got a lot better.
That's a difficult year to take it seriously.
It was, but it gave us something to focus on. Do you know what I mean? So like, we had so much time that it was like, right, let's finally get good at writing songs. And we'd just sit on Zoom every day and kind of just go through riffs and ideas. And I think it was the only thing that kept us sane during that period of time. And, you know, I think that was kind of how we got a bit of momentum, because there were some bands who didn't, you know, weren't able to record at home. Whereas me and Lewis we just made it work. Do you know what I mean? And said, look, we've got this time, let's try and get ourselves in a position so when we come out the other side, we're in a much better position than we were coming in. And that kind of happened, which is great.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I was listening to some of your music earlier, and the first single, at least it's on Spotify, I don't know what else, first single's 2018, and then I think there's one in 2019, I think, and there's a, and then after that, like the next stuff, there's a kind of a real step up.
There is, anyway, yeah. Is
it?
Yeah.
It's very noticeable.
It is, yeah.
It's really cool to watch the development, really. But
absolutely, yeah, that's why we've not taken the old stuff off, because it's still, as much as those songs kind of embarrass me a little bit, I did write them, and me and Lewis wrote them when we were 18, and I think there's a lot of, I think it's cool as well when you discover a band and you can go back through and see like songs from when they were just starting out, because I think a lot of bands tend to like shy away from that, but you know, yeah, they're not the best songs in the world, but we did them, you know.
Yeah. Totally. That's good to own your history, I guess, as a band. Yeah. So where did the band name come from? I'm always curious about where people dredge these ideas from.
Yeah, so it was just I was coming up with the band name a couple of years before me and Lewis even started the band. I was just like, I can literally picture it in my head right now. We're just in college and it was just lunchtime. We just went to walk into Newcastle. And we're walking across the bridge, and I just went, I think Rituals would be a cool name for a band. So then when we started, it was like, right, well, we'll just use that name. You know, that was, we were quite lucky in that aspect, because I've been in situations where it's been very difficult to come up with a band name. So the fact that it came easily, that was like, there's something in this, you know.
That is the first time I've ever heard anyone say that it was that easy. Everyone has to be like, oh, it was awful, it was difficult, we had a big argument about it.
Yeah, just like going through lists of words and stuff. No, we were just like, that's the one, let's just use that.
Decent. That'll do.
Yeah.
Simple. Wow. Well, there you are. So what was your first gig like as a band? Was it good, bad? How was it, if you can remember?
I do believe there's footage of it on YouTube, and it's absolutely diabolical. It is shocking.
Do you want to tell people how to find it or not?
No. I feel like it ruined the image a little bit. but you know what it is? It's like, although it wasn't a great performance technically or stage presence-wise, it was like those shows where you're not playing phenomenal and stuff like that, but you're young, they're just as important as the ones that we do now, do you know? You know what I mean? Because like, you've got to get comfortable. And I'd never really gigged before, so I was pretty uncomfortable on the stage, didn't really know what I was doing. And yeah, like Lewis, you know, that was his first time singing, you know, fronting a band on stage as well. So it was a lot of firsts. And I think when you got a lot of firsts, it's never really going to be great straight away. But, I'm sure I'd watch it back now and I would laugh a little, but yeah, you know.
the trick that I learned long ago is if you're ever not feeling too comfortable in a gig for whatever reason, just start headbanging, especially if you've got long hair, because then you can just hide your face.
That's why I've grown it out now. In that video, I've got a short little fringe, whereas now it's like, we're sorted.
And then it doesn't matter. You can just stare at your fretboard, but you're headbanging, and then no one knows. No one knows.
Yeah, exactly. When you've got lots of hair, it looks like you're doing a lot as well, even if you're just moving it quite slowly.
That's very true. That's very true. Last gig I did, I gave myself some kind of neck ache for 2 or 3 days. That's a sign you're in your 30s, I tell you.
No, don't worry. That's already happened. Yeah, my neck's already pretty pretty tough. It's like there's someone put a roofing tile in it. It's pretty,
Wow. Well, yeah, be careful. That's all I'll say. So have you had any, like, nightmare experience gigs as a band where everything's gone wrong? Or not really? Feel free to omit names if that's helpful.
Yeah, no, I don't. We've never... There's always, like, gigs where it's a bit chaotic and stuff, and, like, you can't sound check, so you do a little... Like a last gig, we didn't even do a line check on. We did a line check and made sure everything was working. We didn't get levels. We just went straight for it and kind of figured it out, because we've played so much together that even if, like, something like the monitor mix isn't quite right or whatever, you can't really hear yourself. The set that we play is so ingrained into us, because we rehearse every week, really. We just kind of get together and jam, and it means that when you're in those situations where it's kind of, you've got just like stuff blaring out the monitors that you don't really want to hear or anything, you can kind of just like, you know where you are, and you can kind of relax a little and not worry about too much. You don't really rely on having great onstage sound or anything like that. We can do it anywhere. Do you know what I mean? But yeah, there's been a few where, like, I know I had one, we're playing in Bolton, and, during the first song, my guitar, the screw that holds your strap in completely came out of my guitar, and I had to finish the song with, like, the guitar on my knee, foot on the monitor. That was a bit embarrassing, but kind of, you know, these things happen. It's not the end of the world.
How did you fix it? Did you just quickly get a screwdriver?
I've always got a spare guitar.
That's the way, yeah.
So that actually reminds me, but there is one that went quite wrong, where we were playing in Burnley, and for whatever reason, the gig was running like an hour and a half behind the scheduled time. And we went on, we were playing the first song. We're like, yeah, it's going well. And then my string snapped, my low strings. And just as we went into a breakdown as well, and just had a going on. And I was like, oh no. And I was like, the worst bit is, this is the one gig I've not put my spare guitar right next to me. It was on the side of the stage. So I had to like run off stage, like tussling around with like guitar straps and stuff, put it back on, and I got it just in time for the end breakdown. But that was probably, that was up there with, like, I was like, that's the last time there's not going to be a spare guitar within my eyesight on stage, because that can't happen again.
I mean, my, if that was me being your like live sound engineer with no sound check, I'd be bricking it for that first song, just trying to make it all work. But there we are. That's not your concern. So
no, exactly. We can't, because we still use cabs and everything, so like we're kind of okay on stage. We just made sure everything was coming through at a decent level through the PA, and then just straight in.
Fair enough. So you mentioned rehearsals, and you mentioned that you rehearse like once a week or so. Do you have your own space? Do you rent out somewhere? What's your approach to that kind of thing?
Yeah, so our drummer, he's got a room in Newcastle that we use, and we all share, and it's perfect, because I think sometimes with rehearsals, if you're paying for somewhere, there's always one eye on the clock. Do you know what I mean? And you're kind of like, well, we've spent 40 quid and we've got nothing done. Do you know what I mean? So I think with us, it's great, especially for the writing music. Because when it comes to like, if we've got a tour coming up, we'll just go in like twice in quick succession, just run the set and just make sure everything's okay. When it comes to write music, we really like to take our time and make sure everything's as good as it can be. So being able to spend, you know, 4 or 5 hours and not have to worry about getting out at a certain time because another band needs to come in or anything like that, you know, we're incredibly fortunate that Matt's got that room and that we're able to do that, because I think we're a better band because of it.
Do you have gear that you just leave set up as well to make it quicker? Or
yeah, so there is a bit of like when we've been on a tour and then we've just kind of dropped all our gear off and kind of left it then we have to set it up the next time. But and we're gigging constantly at the moment, so I think we've not got one for a few weeks now, so everything will kind of be nicely set up and we'll just be able to get in and get through some new riffs and stuff like that.
So when it comes to planning set lists, do you guys have like a stock, like we've got a 25-minute set. Here is our 25-minute playlist or a variation thereof. Have you got that kind of thing with different set list lengths, or do you customize it every time?
Absolutely, yeah. So we've got, I make them in like Logic. I've got like my guitar pedal switches are all MIDI programmed with the backing tracks and stuff like that. I think that's the nice thing about having the set lists in like a Logic project is you know it's bang on this time, so you don't have to worry about playing songs at the right tempo and stuff like that. Do you know what I mean? We know that we're going up there. We normally leave like 30 seconds. So we have like, if it's a 25 minute set, we'll do it for 24 minutes, 30 seconds. Just in case at whatever point we have to hit pause or whatever and just figure some stuff out on stage. But yeah, we've always got a stock list.
With them backing tracks and things, do you sometimes find that they're quite difficult to work with if, say, like the fallback monitoring's not great in a venue or anything like that?
Yeah, so so our drummer, he's on in-ears with the click and the rest of us are on wedges, but it's kind of, we've never had any nightmares with it. We're not that backing track heavy. It's just there for the additional bits, just synths, the odd lead guitar chorus line and stuff like that. So our drummer just gives us a four count and then we're into the song. So it's kind of like, if we can't necessarily make out when the intro is or anything, we just kind of trust the hi-hat count that we're coming in at the right time, and then that'll be okay.
Trust the drummer.
Yeah, sometimes.
When it comes to the hi-hat, trust the drummer. Have you got like talking time in between songs planned as well, like audience interaction or?
Yeah, so between pretty much every song, we have like an interlude of sorts. Because for us, we think it's nice if there's not silence in the room. If there's always just, even if it's just a low droning synth that isn't too prominent, but it's still just kind of there. We always have something like that in between songs. And that's kind of, we don't like structure exactly what Lewis is going to say. We kind of just, depends on how the night is and stuff, so it allows for that bit of spontaneity in there, because we don't want to be that kind of showing up saying the same thing at every gig, do you know what I mean? So we allow that kind of differentiation between each gig.
Seems like a good plan to me. Changing the subject a bit, you mentioned songwriting and things like that in the rehearsal room. How do you guys write songs as a band? Does one band member come and go, here's an entire song, or do you jam it together or something in between? How do you approach that kind of thing?
Yeah, so if I had to take, because we just finished some new music, how those were kind of written, they were just, I write the demos and kind of program some rough drums to them. And then me and our drummer will get in the room and kind of hash it out, mainly working on like transitions and stuff like that. Or if there's any additional accents and stuff like that, we can chuck in there. And that's kind of when the songs come alive, because when I'm sat in front of my computer, it can be pretty soul-destroying sometimes. There's no denying when you're looking at that Logic template for like the 15th time in a row. So we'll kind of get in there, get the songs into like a better shape, then I'll redo the demo to that structure. And then Lewis will come in and we'll just start working on vocals. And the vocals, we finish them off in the studio of our producer, George Collins, and he really helps us with like making sure that everything's as punchy as can be vocally, and we're rhythmically, there's always something cool happening, and making sure that we're not, I don't know, maybe with the melodies going off on a tangent or something, trying to keep them nice and straight to the point and catchy and hooky. So we allow the more singy of the vocals to be kind of captured in that moment in the studio of kind of everyone putting their heads together.
So it's almost being written right up to the completion of recording in a way. It's being refined, it maybe is a better word.
Yeah, exactly. This was this new stuff we've got coming out was the first time that we'd done drums last, recording wise. Normally we do drums first, I'll record my guitars at home, and then we'll kind of do everything else from there. But this time we did we did work on a chorus. No, we recorded vocals for a song, then did the guitars, and then did the drums. We actually went in the studio to record my guitar and Dom's bass this time, which made a massive difference. And again, just kind of reduced that element of hate in my life. Just sat on my own, just recording these guitar tracks. And it's like, it was this time around, I think we really nailed it. And I think when people hear the songs, they'll hopefully think the same. Otherwise, we just wasted our time.
Yeah. We'll find out. Did you find it easier in that regard in the studio that you weren't responsible for the engineering side of things when it comes to your guitars? You were just there to play. That was your thing.
Absolutely, because I do my head in with tuning, like notoriously. Every single release we've had, I've always like tracked guitars, listened back to them, convinced myself everything's out of tune, re-recorded them, and then still convinced myself they're out of tune. Whereas this time I've been able to like, it was two people having that stress. It was me and George sat there going, does this sound right or is it a bit out? But I knew when he would say, that's right, just to relax, you know. I've got a very good, I trust his judgment a lot and stuff like that. And it's overall just made the experience, like, for me anyway, much more fun. And I'm actually, we're getting mixes back and I'm not hating the songs.
Well, that's positive. That's positive. I mean, I guess it's, in a way, it's probably because you've heard them less. You'll have heard them a lot, but you've heard them that much less than when you were doing some of it yourself.
Exactly. And like, not knowing that you've walking out of the studio, knowing everything's in tune, everything's right, everything's in time, you know, nothing's clipping, you know, any of that kind of stuff. It's like, it's a massive weight off the shoulders.
That's nice. Yeah. Clipping is the worst.
There's nothing. I remember on our first single on Spotify, I sent, the guy who was mixing it, I sent him the guitar tracks and he was like, these are all clipping. He was like, and I didn't really know what that was back then. So I was like, what do you mean? Like, I was like, you're going to put distortion on it anyway. And he was like, no, that's not how it works. I was like, oh, okay.
Live and learn. So how is the band managed? Is there a single kind of person who's quote unquote in charge, or do you share out tasks, or what does that look like?
Yeah, so we share out tasks. It's Lewis who spearheads a lot of the kind of the gigs and the social media and stuff like that. And me and our drummer will chime in when needed and offer our two cents. We all take our tasks, you know. Dom does a lot of the driving, so kind of he's good. That's, you know, and that's, it's not easy, do you know what I mean? Like some of the drives you do through the night. So he's a massive help in that regard as well. And he'll chime in as well. And we've gotten a lot better at all saying our opinion on stuff and kind of making it a bit, yeah, just kind of we all have our say. And that's really important, I think.
So there's not someone in the centre making every decision as such.
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, we'll disagree on things, you know what I mean? But like, if three people in the band think something and one thinks the other, then we're going to go with the three, the majority, do you know what I mean? I think that's a good way, because it means that everyone feels that their opinion's valued.
I think working out that element of the band, the kind of, I don't know how to put it, the social but kind of working out planned side of the band can cause so many problems for so many bands, and it's really important to get that right for you.
Absolutely. And like, don't get me wrong, we've definitely like made mistakes and that kind of stuff, but we're kind of at a position now where we just listen to each other. No, we just listen to each other a little bit more. You know?
That really helps.
No one's out to get each other, you know.
Lovely. Well, that's a nice positive situation. What would you say has been the biggest success of the band so far?
Yeah, it would have been last year playing Download. You know, that was Stuff of Dreams, getting to play the same day as Metallica. Like, we were sound checking, and I could hear Metallica sound checking at the same time. And I was like, this is just insane. And, you know, that all came through Kerrang Radio and Marshall Records, the deal competition. So I can't thank them enough for giving us, you know, the opportunity of a lifetime, because, you know, not many bands are fortunate enough to get the opportunity to play a gig of that size. And, you know, we were always going to be thankful for that. But it was the kind of that week we had our headline show in Newcastle as well, which was just as mind blowing. And it was kind of just like a 7-day period of just everything just going right, you know. And that isn't always the case. So it was, we couldn't be happier with how we represented ourselves and all the people who like voted for us in the competition as well. And I think, yeah, that's going to take some topping.
Headline. That's.
Yeah. Well, we're waiting on an offer.
We'll see. 2025.
Oh God. I don't think we've got enough songs yet.
If you play your earlier stuff, you might.
Yeah, exactly.
You might not enjoy playing it, but it's there.
Yeah, we'll play it behind the curtain at the start of the show. Yeah.
That reminds me of Rammstein. I saw them at Sonisphere. Do you remember Sonisphere?
Yeah.
That festival died, didn't it?
Yeah.
And I saw them, and I'd never seen them before. 2010, actually, that's when I saw them. And they had a big black cloth, I don't know why I'm telling the story, over the whole stage, and then they started the first song, and I can't remember what the song was, and then the whole thing descended, and it was just one giant German flag the size of a festival stage, and it was it was not expected, and then that dropped, and then there they were, and it was
honestly, the day we have a curtain drop, that'll be when my life's peaked. When the first riff kicks in and the curtain drops, I'm there.
It's pretty cool. Not many bands do it, at least not that I know.
No, I know. I feel like it needs to come back. It's kind of like the mystery. Do you know what I mean? I think Slipknot used to do it. I think they still do now, which I always think when they do a curtain drop, it's always going to be better than everyone else's, because like you're dropping the curtain, it's just absolute carnage going on behind it, you know.
I saw Judas Priest. I saw them years ago, and they did it actually as well.
Yeah.
But then unfortunately the curtain fell on some lights, and then some people had to try and get it down. But
oh good, that's always a bit awkward, isn't it?
It's going to happen somewhere, isn't it? It's going to happen somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. You know, 99% of the time it'll be all right.
Good times. So what goals do you have for the band for the next 6 months to a year or so that you can talk about?
Yeah, so as we talk about, honestly, it's just going to be to keep play, you know, playing as many shows as we can, and the main goal this year is to reach as many people who haven't heard us as possible. And we're going to be doing our best and working as hard as we possibly can to achieve that. And we think we've got new music, which is the new music makes me feel kind of, don't know how to explain it, but it makes me almost cringe at like the more recent stuff we've released. And I don't know if that's just because I'm older than I was then. But yeah, it's like it's a step up. And I know everyone says that, but I mean it.
I have to wait and see. Or wait and hear.
Yeah, exactly. This is where everyone's like, what happened to that band? It's terrible now.
Is this when you bring out some K-pop? Is that what the new stuff is?
Yeah, we're going smooth jazz.
Oh, it's just, okay, slightly different direction.
A bit of psychedelic grunge in there as well, yeah.
Do you know, you just made me think, is there such a thing as a jazz metal band? There must be.
I think Dillinger Escape Plan have moments of it.
It's only moments, though. There must be a full-on, I'm going to have a look. I'm too curious.
I'm trying to think. There's a few bands who get out the chord extensions out now, isn't there?
Yeah. But then at what point does a metal jazz band just become a prog band? Oh, that's philosophy, well, isn't it?
Yeah, that's probably it, isn't it?
I don't know.
Because we've got guitar players like Alex Skolnick and stuff like that who are very into their jazz stuff. And like, jazz is always something for me that's just not connected. But I can appreciate it.
That's fair. My penultimate question for you, really, is what is your best piece of advice for bands nowadays?
It's really difficult because, you know, we're still learning, you know. Loads. We've got so much to learn and so much to do. Like, we're very, you know, we've really not been doing it very long, do you know what I mean? But I think the most important thing, especially from my point of view in the kind of songwriting stuff, is just like the ability to be self-critical. You can write a great riff, but does it necessarily fit in that song? Stuff like that. Are you just chucking it in there for the sake of it to please yourself? Or are you doing it to actually make the song better? And I think that's something that we've gotten, and I think it shows in these newer ones we've gotten better at. There's like, you know, every riff kind of makes sense because the original demos for these songs and stuff had, I think we must have pinned about 2-3 riffs per song that were just in there for like no reason. So yeah, I'd say being able to take feedback and be self-critical, you know.
Yeah, no, that's good advice. Good advice. I think every band, no matter how old or young they are or new they are, have some advice to give. So I don't think you should do yourself down for being relatively new.
And it's always difficult because I'm always like, I've not been around very long. I'm chatting rubbish. You know, that's fair.
My final question for you is to kind of close out the podcast. I'd like to ask your favourite song from the band. Well, it doesn't have to be your favourite song, but a song you'd like to play at the end of the podcast. So which song is it and why?
So the song we're going to play is Ocean Subside. That's the song that got us to Download Festival. And it's a song that was probably for the first time I wrote a demo and nothing changed. And as it is on the record, that's how it was written. So, Ocean Subside.
Cool. Well, this is Rituals with Ocean Subside. Ewan, it's been really great to chat with you.
Spot on. Thanks so much for having me.